Yes.
You did it. Congratulations. So it is June 30th. Wow, we are at the end of June, 2026. It's strange. I was thinking about how, like, a lot of people get born in one century and then live into the other century. But like my mother was born in 1909, but she died in the year 2000. My father was born in 1905 and he died in 1986, so he stayed in one. I think it's disorienting to move through different centuries, you know. Anyway, that's a what we would say, neither here nor there. Yeah, I've been some sort of Dharma and recovery adventures in the past week, so I will share on that and try to make those things irrelevant beyond my own personal story, which is how I try to approach this role of sitting here and talking to people. So let's start with a period of about 20 minutes of meditation. We'll have some guidance in here, and then we'll have some quiet as well. So just settling into your posture. Maybe I'll move the microphone a little closer because now I'm starting to talk softly like a meditation teacher. All right, so settling into your meditation posture, whatever that might be for you, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down. You can close your eyes or just gently lower your gaze. There's certainly no need to look at the screen. And beginning then with awareness of the body, just in a general sense, feeling how you're holding your body. Letting the body relax. If you can tune into doing that. Letting go of any tension around the shoulders, softening the belly, loosen the jaw. This is a helpful relaxation exercise. And feeling the body breathing. You can start by just feeling the movement, the way the breath expands and contracts the body. Then bringing the attention in more closely to the sensations of breath. You can focus on the touch of air at the nostrils coming in and out. Or you can follow the movement of the breath, the chest or belly as it expands and contracts. Nothing special, just the ordinary experience of breathing. This brings us into the present moment, into the body. A very simple awareness. Meditation, in some ways, is a way to simplify the mind. Breathing in, breathing out. Well, the Buddha's instructions on mindful breathing start with this most basic awareness. How does the in-breath feel? How long does it last? What happens to the body? How does the out-breath feel? These two aspects of breath playing balancing roles. The sustenance of oxygen, the cleansing of the exhalation. The in-breath energizing, rising. The out-breath calming, settling. The mind may still wander, taking the attention away from the breath. So we gently bring it back when we notice that happening. Sometimes the habits and momentum of mind, of thoughts, will keep us spinning. The mind can be unruly. And other times a little bit more settling happens. A sense of peacefulness or attunement. Being with the moment. In either case, whether there's a busyness or a calming, after we bring our awareness to the body and settle into the breath and the body, it can be beneficial to look beneath the physical sensations to the underlying energetic states, the nervous system, the pre-emotional energies that are felt through the body, but are distinct from ordinary sensations. Those are a attention becomes more refined in meditation, can start to tune into these subtler flows of energy and feeling, and breathe with them just as we breathe with the body. When we first encounter and try to work with this world, there can be a resistance, a pulling back. Sometimes these energies and feelings are the very things behind our addictive tendencies, things that trigger us to want to escape. So it can seem dangerous to turn toward them. But when we're able to do this, we begin to see that they don't have the power that we've been giving them. If we don't fight with them, we just allow them to move through, to rise and fall like the breath. Like any sensation, impermanent. Not me, not mine. And so again, we return to the breath, to the calming, the grounding of just being here. Just breathing, just sensing the body, just feeling. Not creating stories, analyzing, just allowing things to be as they are. Like I had the original sound from musicians on before. I don't know if people were hearing more background noise. I hope not. I hope that was not a distraction. It was just somehow I had the setting wrong. I'm just, I've said this a couple times recently, but just how much this kind of class kind of becomes like a highlight of my week, especially when I'm not doing much other teaching. It's really great to be here and see everyone. For those who might be new or just
You're
are not,
overrode.
excuse me, let me just mute everybody. Thank you. there's kind of a core group, but not that it's not like an insider outsider thing, but a bunch of people who've been hanging out here for a long time, and that's pretty cool. So a couple things. I mean, I noticed June 30th, and I was like, well, right about the middle of the year, about I guess exactly 6 months what into the year, or six, we've, and I get to the my self-published books. I can see on a daily basis how they're selling, and at this time of year, they're like at their nadir. The sales are at their lowest, and it's just so predictable, right? In January, big jump, right? So it's so interesting. And I was thinking about, summer and this time of year and the energy. Like I tend to feel more uplifted at this time of year, and living in the Northern Hemisphere, summer, and I can remember being, there was a point when I was like 19 or 20 when I kind of had like a manic thing one summer. Like it's kind of like, it's like, anyway, why would anybody quit drinking in the middle of summer when all the fun is happening? It's like going to the reservoir and whatever, just going camping with a case of beer, whatever. But we, those who are here, who are part of this, like January, June, it's like we just show up and do what we do, which is beautiful. So, if I had a theme of the past week, and I'm feeling a little warm, I'm wearing my Thelonious Monk t-shirt today, which I don't often wear in public. And it's funny, I bought it at the New Orleans Jazz Museum last fall. And it just, it was like, shall I get Miles Davis? I was like, Miles, I love Miles Davis, and it's a little too predictable. I was like, let me get something a little bit more unusual. So it's Thelonious Monk, but on the bottom, which you can't really see, it says Monk. And I wasn't even thinking about it at the time. And then somebody was like, oh yeah, that's really funny, a monk. I'm like, oh yeah, right, okay, yeah. Should have worn it to the monastery on Saturday, right? Anyway, so if I had a theme the last few days, maybe it's kind of like, what am I doing? What is this? And what I've done as a teacher has evolved significantly in the last 25 years. When I started doing Buddhism and the 12 steps, and I would, go through the 12 steps in many classes and retreats, and bring up like Buddhist correlates and connections to each of the steps. And I rarely do that these days. So a couple things came up. At the monastery, there, so there was a big event at the Abhayagiri Monastery this weekend, celebrating 30 years of the monastery. The person who runs the like online classes for Spirit Rock came up and started was talking to me, and he's a Dharma teacher in his own right, Sean Oakes. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe I should do something for Spirit Rock. And he was like, yeah, sure. What would you like to do? And I was like, what would I like to do? Like, I don't know. And then I'm trying to get do the I'm doing these things sort of in sequence. So that got me thinking about would I like to go back and do like a Buddhism 12-step course, online course, maybe? Or am I, is there something else? How would I? And then on Sunday, I met with the parents and brother of an old friend of my daughter's, who's in treatment. And, when I found out he was in treatment, he was somebody who was very kind of special to us. And I was like, oh, can I help? And let me come over and talk. And I was, as I was talking to them, I was like, what do I do? What am, like with you guys, it's like, I can just talk and it's like addiction and I can like, the connections are all like obvious, but it was kind of like hard to explain to these people like what I do and how I might be able to help. And I like, what do I? And I got an email from, I'm going to Ireland in a few weeks, and I'm going to, among the things I'm doing, which is mostly golf, I'm going to be giving a workshop, sort of a fundraiser for a treatment center there. Which is how I get some of the free golf by volunteer, trade off. And they said, maybe you could send us a title and like a description of what you're going to do. I was like, oh, what am I going to do? And I'm not big on like, planning. My teaching is always apparent in this class. And so what I came up with, and this might relate to all these things, is I think I'm going to call it Meditation for Recovery, and then subtitle Benefits, Challenges, and Strategies for Using Meditation in Recovery. And then I can write about that, describe it. And that's, in a way, as you guys know, that's kind of what we do here in a way. I mean, obviously we connect meditation then with the larger teachings on the Dharma. But what's so important to me and that I talk about so much these days, and I talked about in the guided meditation, was tuning into our inner experience through meditation and learning to hold particularly the difficult in a non-reactive way that helps us not to spin out and get triggered. And that's kind of, connected to the whole like trauma-informed mindfulness movement. And, but it's also connected to like loving kindness practice. And it's connected to concentrating the mind, and it's connected to seeing the three characteristics. It's dukkha, anicca, anatta, that there is suffering that I'm experiencing. It's impermanent and it's not me, it's not mine. And so this simple, what I view, I mean, not simple but not easy, right? Process of sitting with yourself opens up this very broad doorway to wisdom, to dealing with life, to dealing with addictive tendencies, and to see even to this really important shift in perspective in terms of how you see the world. And if I were going to connect that to the 12 steps, which I can do and have done, this connects to me, it connects to turning my will and my life over to the care of the Dharma, which I like to rephrase as, well, an aspect of that is seeing my experience through the lens of Dharma, understanding what's happening to me, not through this lens of, oh, it's happening to me, but it's happening. And what is it if I don't have it? If I don't, tell a story about that this is happening to me, what, how can I view this? And that's what the three characteristics that the Buddha offers and points out as elements of every moment of our experience. That's a big shift. And although we usually put anatta, the not self or non-self, at the end, we can, it's in some ways it's at the beginning of this shift in perspective, because it's saying, okay, in order to see it differently, we have to first go, okay, let me not just like have my the story. So if we, instead of talking about self, like which has this sort of big and sort of abstract idea, what if we say a story, my the story of me versus I'm going to let go of the story of me. And then I don't have to make it into this like, oh, is there a self? Is there not a self? It's just like, what am I doing right now? What in my mind, in this mind, what is happening? And how am I understanding and interpreting what's going on? And so our ordinary way of understanding and interpreting what's going on is that these things are happening to me, and I have to deal with them and figure them out and solve them because they're me and they're my problems. And while all of that can be helpful, like I'm going to deal with my problems, it's the spin-off from the I have a problem, what that does to the story in the mind. It tends to spin us off into negative self-view. Like, I have a problem because there's something wrong with me. And now, as you can see, I've gone from, oh, this is difficult and painful, to, oh, man, I'm a mess. And then all that comes out of that, this, the papancha, we call it, the proliferation of mind, a proliferation of thought. So I was thinking about, as this family was telling me about their son, and some, it's clear that there's like an underlying anxiety disorder, we would call it, right? And on the one, and he's in treatment, so he's getting therapy around that, starting to see that, and that's useful, right? Like we need to like be able to see, like, oh, what are the underlying emotional psychological characteristics that I have. And if you want to not use, you have this other thing, which is basically a vow. We don't really talk about it like that, but it's basically a vow. I don't do that anymore. So no matter what's going on this emotional side that I want to investigate and I want to learn how to work with it, I also just not gonna do that. So those are like two wings of the recovery process. And I would say that kind of in between them, now I'm just following my stream of thought, so we'll see where it goes. The investigation of an understanding, oh, I have this problem, this psychological, I have a tendency to anxiety and, depression or some, some tendency, some OCD or something. Before I can, and I have a vow, but in between, it's like, how do I live with that? Because it's great to have a vow, but at a certain point, it can get overwhelming. And so we need to, meditation can give us a way to work with the energy of these psychological issues. Now, We also know that in a treatment and, semi-medical setting, they're going to probably offer some pharmaceutical approach, which could obviously, has its place and certainly can be important, but isn't, doesn't teach you anything, let's say that. And so, not to, I definitely don't dismiss that as a useful and at times vital tool. What we want to learn to do is to live with ourselves as we are. And when I say meditation in recovery, that's what I think I'm trying to help people, I'm trying to bring to people, is that I'm not telling you, I'm not teaching you to meditate so that you can have a nice quiet 20 minutes every morning. I mean, that's great, and I hope that happens and that is beneficial. But really what I want is I want you to learn to be okay with how you are. And even when that how you are is really disturbing and difficult, that we're going to learn to through this practice to breathe with, to allow. And part of that, so there's this physical, I guess, psychophysical, whatever, way of applying awareness. To and then you, with the breath, to just feel the experience, and our partner in that, our mental partner there, instead of the mental response to it being, oh shit, I've got this problem that I need to solve. Instead, what I the re, my response to it, what I learned, the way I learned to respond is, oh, there it is. This is unpleasant. It's dukkha. But it's moving. It's energy. It's rising and falling. It's not going to last forever. It's not a solid thing that I have to solve. It's something I live with, that I can be with, that comes and goes, rises and falls. Maybe over time subsides. Maybe sometimes needs, medicine. But I see that it's not a solid thing. And that then the solid thing that I imagined it to be is the self. That's both me. But it's not even like this feeling isn't my identity. But in fact, what I do is I make the feeling into a thing. I give the feeling a self. And that's when we name it, when I say depression, anxiety, whatever the condition, when I diagnose it, I'm making it into a self. And so not only do I see that I am not the feeling, that doesn't define me, but the feeling itself is not a thing. Neither of those. I hope that makes sense. But this is where the concept of not self, I think, becomes really, really interesting when you start to see that nothing has a self. Because it's typical of our self-centeredness that when we hear the teaching, oh, not self, that I think, oh, I don't have a self. Oh, well, what am I going to do with that? Well, I want to be a good Buddhist and let go of myself. I'm going to work on that, But rather than like looking around and going, oh, no, none of it's all, ch and it's and none of it has a self because it's all constantly changing. So there's nothing stable. A self, a thing, has to be stable. It's just, it's an object. It's an unmoving, thing. And so we have this combination of wise view, which sees how things operate, and we have this meditative connection, the training that helps us to be with the difficult. And that's the work that we're doing. That and I think it's important again to contrast those. Like, I've got them over here. Okay, I've got them, the meditative connection, and I would say soothing and being with and holding gently, lovingly of the experience, along with the right view, the view of it. And then over here is the diagnosis that's me, that is pain, and I can't handle it. So we're trying to, you know, move from that view, from that experience of ourselves, of our lives, you know, over to this other way of being. So it's, you know, it's, that's sort of a, seems like a long way from Buddhism and the 12 steps, you know, and I don't know, well, there, I guess I'm sitting here trying to answer the question that I asked myself, which is, what is it that I do? But I also think, like, because I trust you guys and I know you guys, and I know you've been sitting here with me for years going, you know, working with many of these different ideas, I feel like I can work through this, these ideas with you, where, like, somebody's parents that I, you know, it's hard for me to take them through, because you know what I'm talking about. You've been through all of this, from the agony to the ecstasy, you know, and so you get it. So it's hard. I don't know if, like, the untrained, unaddicted, you know, recovered person can take in and get what it is that I'm saying, and I'm talking about this process. But I really appreciate you guys being here and listening and being with me through this, and maybe that helped me to tell the people in Ireland what I'm going to do. And maybe it'll help me to create a course, you know, mindful meditation in recovery. And maybe it'll help me to help my daughter's friend. But at least I know it's helping my mind to feel more at ease and more of a sense of clarity. So thank you for your kind attention, as I hear the wise monks say when they give a talk. And I will open it up to comments. I see we've already got some hands arising. Paolo.
Forgive me, guys, for not being on camera. I've got a spotty connection once again. And once again, Kevin, you've put in your finger on the pulse of something that I just think is vital. I love how you map this territory out for us and help us develop a language for it. I've often, because I feel like people err on the side of making too much of it, and people err on the side of not making enough of it. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we use these labels as instruments and tools as opposed to pathologizing them? Like, I need to know that I'm an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then there's a way of pathologizing it and making, mm-hmm. you know, putting a tattoo on my forehead.
Right.
And anything and everything I do is as an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know, I might have OCD tendencies, mm-hmm. but how right. do I then use that as an instrument and as a tool to help aid me in overcoming things, as opposed to now making it into a problem
yeah.
with a capital P.
Exactly.
And it's really nuanced. Like, I need to know mm-hmm. that I have depressive tendencies without yep. making it who I am. Thank you, Kevin. Yeah. I'm not quite sure what I'm saying.
No, that's really great, Paolo. I think you're pointing to something really important. And I appreciate how you're bringing that out. Like that diagnosis has its value, but it becomes an ident when it becomes an identity, then it falls into clinging, right? And then we have that whole like victim mentality. And this is somewhat pervasive in our culture now, right? Like it's good to understand trauma. Like that's really a helpful lens to understand a lot of experiences in life. And when you make that into your identity, then you're just there's no movement now. Now you're not healing, you're not solving, you're just blaming, basically. Oh, these are my problems. It's like the old, well, I'm an alcoholic. What do you expect? I mean, sure, I drank. Yeah, I'm gonna go to the bar now because I'm an alcoholic. Like, no, that's not helping. It's like I took step one, but I didn't take any other steps. Well, that's not helpful at all, So we do, this is, and as you say, it's a subtle distinction. It's very easy. I mean, this is one of the truisms of the spiritual path. It's easy to get stuck on anywhere on the path. I was listening to a podcast of that actually you guys might want to check out. It's called the Clear Mountain Project, and it's some monastics up, some younger monks up in Seattle, and so they kind of got this youthful tone to them. And somebody asked this question, which I thought was pretty stupid, but was not stupid. But anyway, I thought it was stupid, which was, "Can you get addicted to the Dharma?" And I was like, "That's kind of dumb." It's because they were talking about addiction in these Buddhist terms. And I was like, it's not that you get addicted to the Dharma, but you can get stuck at certain points in the path. Like you can get very attached to concentration, for instance, and you can get very attached to I'm an alcoholic, and never have a sense of life beyond that kind of. So thank you. And go ahead, Monica. Come on.
The new things are
You're the
jumping
tech
around.
person here. You got
I
to be able.
know. I didn't realize they changed everything. So thank you for this. This is a. There's. A, I always love all your topics, and I take notes on them for you. But, so this retreat I went on was not Buddhist retreat per se, but there was a lot of meditation.
What?
You. Oh yeah. No, cover your ears. But so an interesting thing happened at this one because there was some drama that was not the facilitator's fault,
Right.
but three people decided to up and leave.
Oh.
And
And
I
this was like a horse retreat.
Well, it was yoga, meditation,
Wow.
Reiki, and then that, and we're horse people at the
And
same.
equine therapy kind of thing, or
Yeah, that was the, that were there was some of that
I
too.
love that. Yeah, that sounds great.
But three people up and left, and we thought we had created, like, we talk in Buddhist retreats, the container.
Right, the safe space and
Yeah,
all.
and it felt like the container had been broken through, and it
Oh.
was. My practice has helped me deal with something like this and not run away, and not, I just heard you talk about it sort of that we can. But what I felt for those three people was I felt profound sadness because by them leaving, they were creating such great suffering for themselves by not seeing the process through. And I don't know how one deals with, in those cases, with the not self. And I know we're talking about not self, but how does one deal with those feelings of suffering for others, others suffering? So, and I know that's not what we're,
No, I mean, you're asking the question, how does one deal with the suffering of others?
Well, yeah,
I mean,
perceived.
it's, one of the main themes of Buddhism, right? Compassion,
Right.
caring about others. And in this realm, the recovery realm, we know that it's also can become another imbalance when we care too much about the suffering of others. And we have programs for people who give themselves away, or depend upon other people. They need other people to be okay for them to be okay. Yeah, I mean, particularly being with parents of a struggling addict, it's always really poignant, and also just brings up that f challenge of like, well, I mean, when you're a parent, you can't help it. The feelings are going to be there, but let's step out of that realm because I don't want to go there so much. But when you look at the news, for instance, that there's so much suffering in the world, and how do we hold all that? And I think it's very much exactly what I just described as a process, which is that we see it, we see the suffering, we don't close it out, and we can have the diagnosis. Like, there is this suffering, there is this evil in the world, there are bad people doing bad things, and I have to respond to that wisely, or else I become a victim of that. I become overwhelmed by that. That becomes, I get caught in that. So I apply the same principle of meditating and feeling that and allowing it, and trying to awaken caring, which is another aspect of right view, right? Rather than, oh, those people are evil and the world is really, really sucks and I hate whatever, or I can't handle it, or it's overwhelming. Then it's like, oh, it's painful. And, everything, there's dukkha, anicca, anatta, it's impermanent, and it's history, and it's humans, it's greed, hatred, and delusion. I wrote about that in Living Kindness. So yeah, it's the same process of holding things wisely and carefully, and recognizing that, like, sometimes we're not going to be able to be, we're going to be getting out of balance. I mean, that's the whole thing. That's the truth of balance, that there is no balance. Balance is just as temporary as anything else. And so I do my best. And then sometimes it's like, oh man, I just can't take it. This is overwhelming. And we cry, or we yell, or we go out in the street with a sign. Then we're, wholesome, skillful response, right? We're not passive about the world's suffering. But, when people leave a retreat, I mean, it's like, I'm sorry, and I'm still here, so I have my work to do.
Well, that's, I still think it was very beneficial. I got a lot out of it.
I
Just,
bet.
yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah. It's almost inevitable that some people can't handle any kind of a retreat. Like, gets overwhelming for people. People
Right.
aren't ready. It's fine.
I
Yeah.
understand. Thank you for that.
And
Yeah.
yeah,
Not ready.
hopefully they got something out of that too, So, yeah.
Thank you. That helps so
Thanks,
much.
Monica.
Yeah.
Yeah. John M.
I'll try to be quick.
Yeah. Well,
I
you
know
know
we're at the
me.
end of the time.
I don't have a big day planned here, so.
Neither do I. I think, what I appreciate about what you do with both your writing and these talks is that you use your experience. The fact that your talk today was centered around what, this family was experiencing. You weren't just describing, what Buddha did. So that to me just means a whole lot, and it makes it so much more appealing. And, I didn't get to your book in this talk until
had 40 years of sobriety, and I'm 72 years old. So I can't, if I share my experience as a new alcoholic, I'm not going to talk about this. I'm not going to talk about, suffering and impermanence and self. I'm going to say, well, I woke up from my last drunk and I was miserable, and and that's going to be it. And I think that is what I think you have to offer, certainly for me. And I think the demographic in this meeting are all people who've been around, as you've said, and get this. Somebody who's just in a treatment center, I would struggle too, but the best I could do is like, yeah, here's what the hell I did, and called AA. Had to use a phone book, right?
It's for me, I have to admit that it's gotten hard for me to know how to engage. I mean, I do know how to engage newcomers, just not my biggest interest, which is sort of selfish on my part, but everybody needs help, so here we are. Mike, we'll wrap it up with your comment.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin. Good
Hey,
talk.
good to see you.
It's good to be here. I haven't made it for a while, so it's great to see everybody. And so I did have something I kind of wanted to add to what you were saying. So you're talking about the core practice being able to hold difficult states and not overreact and spin out. And that is obviously the most, the core of it. But for me, there's a part, kind of a pre part to that, which I'm sure you've talked about before, but being able to develop that internal ability to be honest with what's passing through you and be able to recognize those states before they just automatically start coloring everything you do and you're overreacting. Because when I don't, when I get into these states, some of them are easier to recognize, like anger, but fear, shame, anxiety, more subtle. And if you don't recognize them, they start coloring all your actions before you even realize it, and you don't get a chance to really bring the lens of mindfulness to, to bear on this. So I was just going to say, for me, big part of the practice too has been developing through, I think, meditation is the way you practice this, just kind of trying to be honest with yourself, with what's going through your mind, and recognizing what's going through your mind.
That's a really, really good point, Mike. And for me, I mostly have to reverse engineer that. Like I have to realize, oh, why did I just lose my temper? Or why am I thinking about this? Or, see that I'm looking more at the end result of that negative state to realize what that it's there, because as you're suggesting, you don't always see it. It's not always clear, and our minds are very deceptive, right? They want us to we always want to feel like we're right and that we're okay. And so if we behave in a certain way, like if I lose my temper, it's because it was appropriate in my mind, right? That person deserved that. They were being stupid, like they were, and to be able to go, oh wait, actually, yelling at people, whatever, because they're in the crosswalk, they're not in the crosswalk, for instance, which is the type of thing that I can, at least inclined to want to do. It's like, I'm probably not in a good mood. I thought I was okay. Because there's that way in which you get to be like, oh, I can just, yeah, okay, up, down, mood, difficult. And then it's like all of a sudden you're being an asshole and you're like, oh, wait, I thought I was holding all this skillfully, but actually I was stuffing it all, or I was, not, imagining that I was holding it. So, yeah, thanks for that. Now I feel really bad. Just kidding.
It's so easy to indulge or ignore these states
Yes,
and
that's
not even
beautiful.
realize.
Indulge or ignore. Yes, and that's the tendency again, right? And so then to find the middle way, hello, Buddhism. Yeah, is the challenge. So beautiful, boy. Great comments today, and thank you for all of your interactions, guys. Yeah, I guess Bill asked me in the chat about, because I was talking about Spirit Rock, and I do continue to have a monthly class for them the second Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific time on Zoom. But I was just thinking about, like, oh, maybe I could offer like an 8 week Buddhism in recovery, blah blah. So we'll see. If anybody has any ideas, please, email me. Send me an 8 week class structure that I can fill in. And I will give you karmic goodwill. All right. Great to see everyone. I will plan to be back here again next Tuesday. We will have crossed over into July and to America's 250th anniversary and my wife's and my 29th anniversary on July 3rd. Yes, we were married the day before the 4th of July, so everybody always celebrates our anniversary. The fireworks go off at midnight.
Congratulations.
Great. Yeah. So next year's
I'll be
the big year.
75 next Tuesday.
Oh, great. Wow. All
Oh,
right. We'll have
many
a
blessings.
well, somebody will bring a virtual cake for you, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's
I'll
real
leave that
awesome.
up to Eleanor. She's in charge of cakes.
Okay. Enjoy your day, Mr.
Right. Yes. All
Yes,
right.
Thelonious.
And
Thelonious, no doubt. Yeah.
yes, Thelonious. What a great name, huh?
I know. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right,
Thank you,
Monica. Thank you.
Kevin.
All right, everybody.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Kevin.
Happy
Thanks.
birthday.
All
Thank
right.
you, Monica. Thank you,
Six
Monica.
o'clock. There you go. All
Second
right.
Friday, 6 o'clock. Is
Yes,
that what it
second.
means?
Yes, it is second Friday, 6 o'clock.
Thank you.
And I think they charge you money, Paolo, so watch out.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think they're free.
Well, you can think that. I think you can make it free if you're like, I don't have any money, let me in.
The poor boy.
All right, I'll see you. I'm ending the meeting for all. Bye.